if you're able to do something well, I think you keep doing it until the opposite happens. Like, we do things that we are reinforced to do and that have more reward than punishment for the most part. Business has had plenty of punishing events, but so many more reinforcing events in between that it's just like, I can't imagine not doing it because I enjoy it so much.
How do you create an unshakable business? I crossed $100 million in net worth by the age of 28. Now I'm growing acquisition.com into a $1 billion portfolio. In this podcast, I share the lessons I've learned in scaling big businesses and helping our portfolio companies do the same. Buckle up and let's build.
I always wanted to do something of my own, and I told myself a story that I wasn't cut out to do it because I saw so many people on social media presenting this image of unbreakable, powerful. I move through, and I was like, I'm scared all the f-ing time. Like, oh my God, if I don't make money, like, even though it rationally doesn't make sense, even though rationally, if I quit my job at Instagram or McKinsey or Blackstone, I can get another job next day. There's that weird primitive lizard part of my brain that's like, oh.
Yeah.
And so I would be like, no, the fact that I feel this fear means I'm not cut out to be an entrepreneur. Mm. And I've since learned, after having quit my job, done a ton of therapy, I've been fired as well. It's to your point, actually, the people who achieve the most are the ones who are the most afraid, because they put themselves in a situation that are the scariest and they sit with it and they move forward anyways. You've already described three extreme moments of fear after six arrests, selling for the first time, quitting your job, your 5 weeks of knowing Alex. What was the next moment you remember being like, oh God, like, I am scared shitless?
The next year and a half of starting Gym Launch with Alex, there wasn't like a singular moment where I felt fear, because it was a perpetual state of intense anxiety.
Oh, so the answer is always.
Always, yeah. It went into just a continuous state of anxiety, because when you're first starting a business, the biggest problem is that you don't know what you're doing. And so you're in this constant state of uncertainty and stress about the uncertainty. Why don't I know what I'm doing? Who's going to help me? Like, where do I find the answers? How do I do this, right? And even if something starts to go well, you don't even know what the cause is of it going well enough to make sure it can continue to go well. You're just like kind of flailing. And so that first year and a half, there was a lot that happened. Alex got into a head-on collision, got a DUI, got arrested, not like arrested, but like thrown in or whatever.
Well, he has, you know, five more to catch up.
Yeah, whatever. Arrested for the DUI, whatever that matters. Yeah, yeah. I was like, catch up with me. He was trying to one-up me. And, you know, his mom was in the hospital. He then had a partner that then took all the money that we had saved from all the launches that we were doing.
He just ran off with it.
Oh, yeah. Like, straight up, like, the guy was a complete crook, and still haven't heard from him since the time he took all the money. Just, like, sent the money overseas to his, like, bride order girlfriend. Like, it was crazy. Had a couple different moments in there that I would say like were rock bottom, but it's funny that they don't stand out because the whole year and a half was just like continuous intense fear and anxiety. Like, I had night terrors like every night. I remember like waking up in like complete like pouring sweat. It was just normal that year. And I think that the most anxiety provoking moment was, I think it was Christmas Eve, and we decide that we were going to, rather than Alex and I launching all these gyms, we're going to hire people to launch them on our behalf. And so, you know, we don't know how to hire people. So I was like, I have friends from college who are great at sales. Let's hire them. I can definitely recruit them. They can come help us. And we got six of my friends and I convinced them to quit their jobs. Like, I told them everything I had been doing. I was like, there's so much money I've been making launching gyms. Here's the concept. Here's what we can help you with. Here's what we'll do. And they all quit their jobs. And then 2 days, I think it was 2 days before they were all going to fly out to those locations and do the launch, Alex got a call from the credit card company. And he had said, he was like, I don't know why we haven't gotten a deposit, this and that, all this stuff from the launches we had just done. And that was the money we were going to use to fund these next launches, because you have to pay for flights, hotels, all these things for people to go and, you know, launch these gyms. And he calls them back, and through a series of like conversations, they were like, well, we're holding all the money and you've been shut down. And I just remember him telling me that. And I was like,
oh God,
like I just got all my friends to quit their jobs. This is like, if there's anything, it's like, sure, if it happens to me, like I can handle it. But I'm like, I like convinced them to quit their jobs.
Your friends.
Yeah, my friends. And he, I remember like, was like, this is it. Like, if you want out, now's the time. And I remember he said, he was like, I'm a sinking ship. And like, I'm sorry that I like convinced you to do this with me, but like, you should just get out now. And I was like, I'm not going to get out. We'll figure it out. And the next 4 months, 5 months was like a series of scrambling to collect money through new processors, getting just enough money to pay our staff and fly them out to the next location, pouring it back. And it was just like this cycle of no money, get the money, pay back the money you owe. So Alex and I were like, this is not working. Like, this business doesn't work. We need to do something else. Screw it. Let's just do like an online weight loss business. He even was like, you have your clients you're training online. Let's just go do that. And I'll just do the marketing for it and you'll be the face. And we were like, yeah, let's just do that. And we called all the gyms that we were supposed to launch the next month to tell them that we can't do it. We're like, we're just done. We're not doing this business anymore. Like, good luck. And they hadn't paid us anything. It was going to be like, we go out there, we launch your gym, you split the revenue with us. And I remember like called the first one and the guy was like, you can't not come. And he's like, why? And the, Alex has a guy on speaker and he's like, dude, my gym is going to go under if you don't come out and launch my gym. And he was like, dude, I'm sorry, but like, I can't, I'm not flying out there. I'm not launching your gym. And the guy was like, can I pay you to just teach me what you've been doing? And he was like, what do you mean? He's like, just all the stuff you know about how to launch a gym, just teach me to do that. Like, you don't need to fly out here. You don't need to like send somebody. I'll just do it myself. And Alex like looked at me and we're looking and we're like, I mean, I guess, you know what I mean? Like, I guess so. Like, I guess we just tell you what to do. And that moment, Alex, I think he said, sure. And the guy was like, how much would you charge me? He was like, $6,000. Just like putting a number out. Like, we have no idea. It's like gym consulting. Like, what is this? And the guy was like, done. Charge my card right now. It was like, after all this time of this perpetual stress for like 18 months led up to that moment, followed by 7 more phone calls with the gyms for the next month, who all said the same thing. And then by the end of the day, we had had $48,000 collected from people that said they just want to pay us to teach them how to do what we were doing. And the next 2 months after that, it was insane. It was like going from incredible anxiety and fear into like, holy crap, we can't even stop. Like, we taught people how to do what we did. And in the next 2 weeks, on average, they made $35,000 extra in their gym.
Wow.
Just like using our playbooks.
Insane.
I mean, like, who, like, what? And we were so terrified it wasn't going to work if we just like told them. We're like, we have to do it for them. And from that point on, it was weird because it was like for probably 4 months, everything felt really good. It was like, we're out of the clear. The business is making money. I think we were doing like $300,000 a month. It was just me and Alex, like an assistant. And people were like, their gyms were exploding. It was just like, not one person was upset. It's like, you know, there's business. It's like, what's your success rate? It's like 100. Like, it was crazy. And then I remember that those 4 months were short-lived because we met with a group of entrepreneurs. We got invited to this meetup with a bunch of like 8-9-figure entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And we were like, why the hell are they inviting us? No idea. We went out, met with them. And they were like, tell us about your business. We're like, oh my God, it's like barely a business compared to you guys. Like, they have like 100-person teams. And like, we're like, there's 3 of us. And so we told them what we were doing. And I just remember in that moment, after feeling this like immense sense of relief for months, this guy came up to me and Alex, and he said, when it feels easy is when you hit the gas. And right now is when you hit the gas. And I was like, oh, said, if you don't do this and you don't capitalize on this opportunity, someone bigger, badder, and faster than you is going to come. They're going to take it all from under you and you're going to have nothing again. And he just looked us dead in the eyes when he said it. And I was like, and it was like all of a sudden right back into just in
4 months of
fear.
Peace.
4 months of peace of like, and we got married in those 4 months. Like, I mean, it was a good time. And then that next, him saying that, I went into like, I call it like psycho bunny mode, because we were like, what do we need to do to go as fast as possible to make this work? And we paid a lot of different consultants for help. And in particular, one, you know, basically explained like what we needed to do, because at that point, Alex and I were both doing like the sales, which was the primary function of the business. And he said, you know what? You can't do that anymore. We need to split this business up. So Alex, you need to go do the marketing, because the way that we got those few gyms was through the marketing that he had learned. And he was like, Layla, you need to do everything else and build the business and the team. And I was like, but I've never done that. I've done sales and some marketing. I've never done anything else. And that, I remember that moment where he had all the functions of the business on a board and he circled like all of them except for marketing and said, that's you. That was the next most terrifying moment. So different, but still so terrifying.
Oh yeah.
And then he said, Alex, you don't help Layla. And I was like, what does that mean? Like, what do you mean don't help me? Like, we're like, we help each other all the time. And he was like, if you try and help her, she won't be as good as she can do this. She is completely capable on her own. And it was like, from that point on, that was when really like the separation of roles began. And like Alex and Layla, as we are known today, I think like grew into their skill sets. Because at that point, I think we're both really good at sales. And Alex was starting to learn marketing. And I was kind of there and learn it with him. But like nothing else. And then that is what really exploded the company into, I think in the first 6 months, we did like 7 million. And then year two, it was like 27 million. And then I think like 34 or 36, I don't remember the numbers, million. And then it just like, it continued to explode. And it's funny because it's like, what's the next moment after that? And I'm like, I feel like for the first 4.5 years of business, it again felt just like a constant state of fear, because you probably know this, but it's like you're in the unknown all the time.
Yeah.
It's constantly, whether it's good unknown or bad unknown, it's unknown. Right. You just don't know. And so your brain's like, just tell me what's going to happen next. And you don't know. And you don't know if you're doing it right. Yeah. People can tell you, are they lying? Like you go through all these things. And so I don't even think that it was until we sold the business that I really felt like it was even a success. Like, I think I was just always feeling like, when's the shoe going to drop? When's it going to explode? When's it going to just die? You know? And it, like, we got through COVID, we got through so many things with that business. It's a fantastic business, but you know, like our minds aren't built for success.
Yeah, I totally get that. Everything I've worked on feels like it could fall like apart any moment. And people are like, oh, congratulations on your most recent raise. My head of strategic finance gave me feedback. He said, you keep going these podcasts and people keep congratulating you on your raise and keep going, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. And he's like, yeah, you need to stop doing this because you need to build trust in what you're doing. Do you not believe in what you're doing? I'm like, I do believe, but nobody really knows. Like, and he's like, this isn't working, man. You have to. And I think you get the feeling. Right? It's like, yes, obviously I believe in myself. I believe in what we're doing. I'm working super hard, but you don't know.
You don't know.
And it's that fear that kind of keeps you going.
Dude, I think it's I never felt so hurt as when I read the book, Only the Paranoid Survive, Andy Grover. I was like, I get this.
I love too. So now you've described 5 moments of fear, right? I've been arrested 6 times. I'm selling for the first time. Let me go start a business with the dude off Bumble after 5 weeks. Oh, cool. Alex got a car crash, a DUI, and someone stole hundreds of thousands of dollars. And weirdly, a self-inflicted moment of fear when you're like, things are good. And that's how I know we might be falling behind and we need to totally change the business.
Yeah.
Right. And what I love is every single moment of fear you've described, the stakes are just getting bigger. From personal to starting the business to, oh God, the business is going to die to, oh, it's working, but we need to go even bigger, from hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars. Every single time you're still feeling that fear, but it's just more in terms of what you have to grapple with and handle.
Yeah. And I think, you know, something I like to say when I'm talking about it is like, it's the same fear, different, it's almost like same monster, different mask.
I've never heard that before, but yes.
That's how I think of fear, because it's like, our mind likes to be like, no, this is completely different. Like, you can't get over this. This one's going to kill you for sure. And then I'm like, no. Same monster, different mask. It's just wearing a different mask, but you've had similar situations like this before. And what has happened? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's how I think I move through a lot of it now, is like just remembering and angering myself with such like all the past evidence from the other times, even though they might not seem similar. I also know that that's just like my mind playing tricks on me.
They don't see scary, that scary now.
No. Yeah. Yeah, not at all. They seem definitely. Like amazing moments that you look back on with nostalgia.
That I can talk about and
share.
Oh
my gosh, remember when I got arrested? Remember when we lost all the money? Oh my God, that was amazing. But in the moment, you feel awful, like you're going to die.
There's always that moment I find where the shame turns into, I feel comfortable enough to talk about it.
Yeah.
Like, I was fired before starting Carrot from Coinbase. I was there for 2 months and I didn't tell anyone for the longest time because I felt so much deep shame. Mm. And the one day I shared that with someone, he's like, it's so cool you cared enough about your business that you were willing to just be fired in order to start it. You were just like ready. And I was like, I never thought about it that way. And so in a way, you're showing all these stories that other people might try and hide. And you're like, no, like it happened. I'm so curious too. We're all a little f***ed up to, look, let me put it this way. There's a saying, every hero goes through a journey. And there's always the call of adventure, that moment where the hero decides, am I going to go off and try and fight the big scary monster, or am I just going to like stay here and like tend my farm? Many people, they refuse the call. You're going through, we've literally said five situations already. Every single time you're going the path of more fear, you're answering the call. And you said part of it is because you're just like afraid of who you would be if you didn't take that choice. You're increasingly, as this goes on, you know, by choice 3, 4, or 5, you totally could have just stayed where you were and you would have been 100% fine. Where's that drive coming from? Both you and Alex, right? There's that little f***ed up thing where you're like, more, we're going to keep going. It's still not enough.
If you look at it from a behavior standpoint, think about how reinforced I've been for what I do. I think the best and worst thing that could have ever happened was that that gym launch, when it worked, went from 0 to 27 million. Because what does that cause me to do? That's like such a strongly reinforcing event as like, you are good at business. And then all the money that comes from it and all the recognition and then being able to sell it. And like, I think that people see how much I work and then they're like, what do you do for fun? I'm like, this is fun, you know, because it's so reinforcing for me. I get so much from it in so many ways. And I think that that's, we do what we like doing, right? Or we do what we get reinforced for doing. And think about all the different reinforcers that I have in business, right? So I've got my staff that are telling me that this job changed their life and they've never worked somewhere better before. Reinforcer number one. I've got the fact that me and Alex, when we each make the business better, that also helps each of us by consequence, which makes our relationship stronger, which is reinforcer two. We also get to talk about our ancillary time and have a ton in common. Reinforcer three. Reinforcer four would be like the money made from business, which is like, oh, that's amazing to see that we can make money while building a business that people like. And then with that is, how are we making the money? By making people's businesses better, making people's lives better. And so if you're able to do something well, I think you keep doing it until the opposite happens. Like, we do things that we are reinforced to do and that have more reward than punishment for the most part. And so I think for me, business has had plenty of punishing events, but so many more reinforcing events in between that it's just like, I can't imagine not doing it because I enjoy it so much. And I think that's like a lot of things, different things for people. Some people work a job that they hate, more punishment than reward. So then they go find a hobby, because they need reward to come from somewhere. They need some kind of, you know, positive reinforcers so that they can get that from somewhere. And so they get it from their hobby, or they get it because they take off work and go on vacations with friends, whatever it may be. I just happen to find all of my positive reinforcement in the same place, which I think is a unique advantage. And I think that if you want to go really big and do really big, then engineer your life in that way, where it's like everything's pointing towards the one thing that provides all of this reinforcement, that it makes it almost feel like you're compelled. You can't stop. Guys, I just want to take a quick break to thank all of you for listening to the show so far. If you enjoy what you're listening to, I would be so grateful if you would just consider leaving me a review or even sharing it with somebody who you think would love to hear the kind of content.
As you can see, I don't run ads on here, so the only way that this show grows is if we can continue to make awesome content, and the only way I can do that is through you liking, subscribing, and rating. All right, let's get back to it.
It's almost an evolved version where when you were realizing after your sixth arrest, I need to change my life, you optimize your environment by removing all the bad influences. Now you're another level where your environment's optimized, where you get reinforcement from the people you hire, for your relationship, for your spare time, from the money. You're in a self-upward fulfilling environment where you go through all the shit, but it seems to work. And the environment's encouraging you to actually do it more and more.
100%. And I think that most people, when they tell me, for example, they're like, I really want to outsource my business. And I'm like, well, they're going to have the same problem you have, which is you don't like your business because it doesn't have enough positive reinforcers. So how do we change it so it's less punishing and more positively reinforcing? And then they're like, holy crap, I never thought about it like that. I'm like, yeah, that person that you hire is just going to end up quitting eventually if you leave the environment as is. Fix the business. Why do you not like it? If you really loved your business, why would you want to outsource it? You know, and people ask me, they're like, well, why would you still want to keep running a business if you have all this money? I'm like, because it's so reinforcing. Think about all that I get from running a business. Like, I love doing that. It fills my whole life. What else am I going to do until I die?
I love that because sometimes hustle culture reinforces the concept, oh, you're going to suffer. You're going to go through pain. And they neglect to mention the fear, the anxiety, the suffering. It's only worth it if it's also in pursuit of something you actually like.
100%. And that's where I think people, you know, I've gotten poo-pooed or whatever for like how much I work or talking about like work harder and all these things. I think, unfortunately, most of people in society have a really poor relationship with work. Most people, because of how a lot of people choose to do business and build work environments, have very punishing jobs. And they have jobs where they're not rewarded. They don't get to see the impact they have. They don't get a lot of positive reinforcement at work. Therefore, they want to work less. I've just realized that because I also, of course, had jobs and understood because I did have jobs that were very punishing where I didn't want to be there. I also had jobs that were very reinforcing where that's all I wanted to do was work because I liked the people, I liked the boss, I liked whatever it was, right? And so when I talk about working more and how much I work, well, I do more of it because I like it so much. It's not like it's a punishment for me. And I think that I just wish that people could let go of that association with hard work, because if you're working hard on something that you love, it's like I tell, you know, for example, when mothers come to me, they're like, well, I just, you know, it's too much for me to do that. And I'm like, if you got as much reward from work as you did from your kids, you would work more.
Absolutely. And I love that too, because there, when people ask me, what's your work? I just say, this isn't work. This is just what I do. It's just all together. You've now described these five different moments, right? From the arrest to selling, to working with Alex, to the DUI and running off with money, to 4 months of complacency and peace, to now let's scale more. What about these days, right? You're now CEO of acquisition.com, which by the way, now I see that CEO journey coming from this consultant sitting you down, which by the way, I love the concept. You're like, I'm so paranoid what's going to happen. I'm going to pay consultants, even though my business is working, I'm going to pay consultants to tell me what could go wrong.
Oh, totally.
Like that is another level of paranoia that you and I were so invested in. I love that. And I love how the consultant said, cool, so Alex, you're really good at the marketing. Layla, you are a CEO and you are going to try this, and Alex is not going to help you because you are going to make it work and succeed. So now you're CEO of an entire portfolio of companies. So what are the things in this stage of your life that have given you fear or you're even afraid of now?
I think that going from being CEO of a company to CEO of a portfolio is very different, because I have had to learn investing. And so I felt like it was worthwhile to learn. So I'll caveat with this. When we made this decision, I didn't think this was going to be easy. And I didn't think it was going to be like some fast money grab, fast business. I think that if we had decided to start our own business and just like have another business we ran, that thing would have been nine figures very quickly. But I was like, do I want to do that for the rest of my life? Like, what could I see myself doing for the next 20 years, 30 years? Alex as well. And we're like, I feel like it's this vehicle. But I recognize that the gap is that we are not investors. You know, we're entrepreneurs first. So I think that how I have felt and what has been like a constant evolution with acquisition.com has been, I don't doubt our ability to add value to the businesses. In fact, I see the fruits of it. I see it work. I know that we're great at it. We've built a team that's great at it. I feel very confident there. What I've had to learn is, how do I pick what businesses? Because, you know, it's, and I think that it's great that I'm I think that I have a skill of picking people for the company, because now I've learned I just need the skill of picking businesses for the portfolio. And that's been probably the steepest learning curve and a very scary one, because, you know, to go become an equity partner in a business is a big deal. And I don't take it lightly at all. And, you know, I think it's become commoditized to a point that's irresponsible, which is another story. But I think I care so much about making sure that who we partner with, we can absolutely hit it out of the park with, that I've put a lot of pressure on myself on that end. And I think it's resulted in good things, which has been like, I've learned so much in 2 years. But it hasn't been easy. You know, I think that we've gotten lucky also with like a couple of really great companies in the portfolio that have just exponentially grown. And you know, I'm sure there's a few more that are newer in the portfolio that will as well. It just takes a few years to pan out. But that learning curve of going from just like doing business with customers, which is like, they pay you, you provide a service, to like, I'm investing in a business, I am becoming a partner with them, I am buying equity, there's a legal transaction. That, I think, I just don't take it lightly. And so I've put most of my focus on figuring out who are our best partners, what businesses make the most sense for us to invest in, that we can provide an outsized amount of value to. Because that's not only fair to them, but fair to us with our time. You know, you can't, it's not like we're trying to invest in 300 businesses. Like, that's not our model. So I think that that has been, I wouldn't say it's been scary. It's been stressful at times. And I think it's also stretched me in terms of, you know, we have a team of like a ton of very, very powerful individuals. And I think that everyone is very smart on their own. The difficulty comes when the decision needs to be made. Mm-hmm. And there's never been a decision I've made in this business where everyone agreed with me. I think that there's always a few people that disagree. And that's hard when you really respect the people that you've hired. And they're very experienced and good at what they do and know more than me about a lot of things. So I think that's been something that I've had to intentionally work on a lot is, you know, even today, I made a decision on a call and I was like, this is a decision. And two people were like, I disagree. And I was like, you can disagree and that's fine. We're still going to go with this decision. And that's really hard for me sometimes.
I find it to be one of the hardest things is to make a decision with people disagreeing, because then if it doesn't work out, that's on me.
Yeah, it is on me. And, you know, I've said that as well. I'm like, I accept that if this is the wrong decision, I still accept. What I will say is that the framework in which I am making this decision, I think is sound. If the decision doesn't pan out, that's separate from, did I follow the right decision-making process?
Yes.
There's always exceptions, right? And so I just try to make sure I follow the process and, you know, stand by that. But, you know, I think the whole switch from having a company that you have complete control over to having a portfolio of companies that you don't have complete control over, it's, in the beginning, I think it was a lot more anxiety provoking. I think now I've found like definitely my groove and more of a sense of peace about it. But, you know, for somebody who I think exerted a lot of control over the company and got great, you know, reinforcement from it, like it worked really well, it was hard at first not to have that.
Yeah, I love the transparency. There's a misconception many people have that great operators are great investors and great investors are great operators. And that's complete bull. They're very different skills. And to sit there and say, hey, I've sold the company, which is a huge decision in itself. And now instead of operating another, I'm going to go into yet another level of magnitude from I'm an individual contributor, I'm a manager, I'm a co-founder, I'm a CEO to I'm going to run multiple businesses. It's like you're continuing to always seek out the greater challenge.
Yeah. But you know, I would agree. I think that it seems like a worthwhile challenge.
Yes.
And I think that there's two things that I felt like made a lot of sense for me, which is one, I know that because of my work capacity and that I'm a great operator, I can operationalize value creation in businesses in a portfolio. Mm. So I think that is something that I identified early on. The second thing I identified is I'm very patient. I can wait years for something. I have no problem with that. And I've seen just like over the years, people that I know went into investing, they fizzle out because they're not patient. They can't wait for the returns. They can't play the long game. And I actually felt like, you know what? My like crazy work capacity combined with patience, I think would be really fitting for this if I can just learn the technical skills of investing. And it's definitely more intimidating at first, you know, three years in now, because our first investment was 3 years ago. I feel like way more confident, but I think that like with anything new in the beginning, it's just very intimidating because again, it's like same monster, different mask. You know, when we went into software and built our software company, you know, people are saying all these words you've never heard before. So it sounds like, oh my God, I could never understand this. You go into investing, it's the same thing. They're saying all these words, cap table, this, that. You're like, oh God, what does all this mean? But I think once you get past all that, you're like, oh, the same like first principle thinking that got me to be successful in one area can translate to another.
And you've gone to each of these adventures with Alex as partner. You alluded earlier to even making decisions for portfolio companies. You make decisions that people don't disagree with. How do you and Alex decide? If you don't agree, what happens? I'll say for myself, my co-founder and I, we are in co-founder coaching every week. It's like couples therapy.
Really?
Because it's not like one person overrules the other. So it's about learning how to make decisions when one of us doesn't agree. I'm so curious how you've done that with Alex.
You know, I think first off is like, we're not afraid to disagree. I think that we don't mind a little friction when it comes to how we interact in the workplace in terms of like, he'll be like, I think we should do this. I'm like, I disagree with you. Or I'll be like, I think we should just be like, I think you're completely missing that. You know, like, and almost to a point where what we have seen is that when we disagree, we tend to beat up the idea so much with each other. And, you know, here's my point of view, here's his point of view, that we end up always coming to a better decision once we've aired our points of views and beat the idea up enough that, you know, it isn't either one of ours typically. Like, it's not one way or the other. It's like, how do we find this place in the middle where it meets all the needs? And I actually think that that's where the best business decisions come from, is like, if you look at John Mackey, for example, from Whole Foods, he talks about, how do I make this decision a win for the customer, a win for the environment, a win for the community, a win for the stakeholders, a win for me, a win for the employees? And I think that I look at the decisions that way as well, which is like, they should be a win to all the stakeholders involved. Myself and Alex are stakeholders. And so if it's not a win for all of us, we're not thinking creatively enough through the decision. We haven't thought, or maybe we need to go acquire information. Maybe we need to bring in somebody else to find out things we don't know. But we don't settle on solutions, you know, it's like, and we don't go with like his way or my way. It's like, we need a better way. If it can't fit what both of us need from the decision, then we need to go figure out a solution that will. And that's pretty much what has led to the best decisions that we've made in business.
I know my co-founder and I, when we do disagree, it's usually because of our personalities, right?
Yeah.
I tend to have less patience and be very more focused on the short term. He's focused on the longer term. So often it's a choice between do the thing now versus what's the business case for this? And what is the scale? What does this turn into? And we operationalize that. When you and Alex aren't necessarily on the same page, why do you think that is, right? What differences in personality are manifesting in those moments?
I think it's actually pretty similar to what you described. You know, I think what makes it good is that we want to make decisions that are best for the short term and long term. That's right. The best decision. It's best for both. I tend to be willing to sacrifice short term for long term. And I think that sometimes he tended to lean towards, you know, wanting more for short term and less for long term. Right. And so we, by combining both of our points of view, I think we make the best decisions. He tends to be willing to take more risks and more aggressive. I tend to be less willing to take risks, looking for ways to mitigate risk. And I would say less aggressive and more analytical.
Yeah.
What's interesting is I wonder if we would have ended up this way if we weren't with each other. I think that we've kind of exhibited like the opposite ends of the spectrum.
To complement each other.
But it's funny, when he's gone or when I'm gone, we can come centered to a call or like represent both voices for each other. But in a room, just the two of us, we definitely go more towards one end of the extreme or the other.
I remember at dinner, you and Alex, you mentioned there was a period in time where you prioritized the business over the relationship and marriage.
Yeah.
And what about today? Is that still true, or has it shifted back and forth depending on peace or war at the business vibes?
We definitely have not ever shifted back to doing that. We now are able to see how us having a business together benefits our marriage. So I think that before, the way that we interacted in the business probably didn't benefit our marriage. And I also think that that's just some of the territory of being really nervous when it was such a new business and we didn't really know what we were doing, that I think like both of us were pretty stressed.
Yeah.
Now I think we really enjoy doing it together. You know, it's like literally like on the way here to the podcast, I was showing Jason blowing up my phone. We're texting about business. Like, just like we flurry text. Like when I'm at the gym or he's at the gym, like we'll be flurry texting each other with ideas. We should do this, we should do that, blah, blah, blah. And I think now it feels much more symbiotic than it used to.
Yeah.
But I will say that we are so good at now communicating. Like while Alex was writing his book, he said like, hey, I don't want to do weekend stuff right now because like I've got to write the book for the next few months. And I said, that's fine. And I just was like, I will accept that there's a season where like we aren't going to be doing a lot together and that's okay. And then, you know, it starts to feel like there's a lot of distance. And then, you know, one day he was like, we should do like a date night because I think people do date nights because they don't see each other as much and we're not seeing each other as much. And I was like, that's great. And so we started doing a date night. And, you know, if I feel like we're not spending enough time together as husband and wife, I just say something. Yeah. You know, I think people like let it fester and turn into something. And I'm like, I don't like nag him and complain. I'm just like, hey, I miss you. It'd be like really nice to like do dinner. And he's like, oh, that's amazing. Yeah. I was like, I love you. I miss you. Like, want to see you. So I think a lot of people look for like, what are the rules that you follow to like maintain business and marriage? But I think it's like the number one is just quickly communicating what you would like from the other person and then seeing if they're able to reciprocate. And sometimes they're not, you know, like maybe he's in book writing mode and he's like, I can't right now. It's like, okay, I'm also not going to get mad at you for that.
I love that.
Like I think that that's one of the biggest things that we just like in life in general, you don't get your way all the time in your marriage, in your business. And so you have to accept that sometimes you're going to go through phases where you don't get your way, but it's for the best in the long term. Because, you know, maybe I don't get my way of us having date nights that week or that for those few months while he's writing his book, I can show up and be an incredibly supportive wife despite that. And I did that. I was like, I will be the best supportive wife while he's writing this book. And I will make sure everything is happening in the business when he's distracted, like for the next 3 months. And in that can make our marriage stronger, you know? So I think you work with what you've got.
If you were to meet yourself right after that moment where you're talking with your dad, saying what your life's going to be, if she could meet who you are now, what do you think she would feel?
The first word I heard was like stoked.
She'd be stoked.
Stoked. I think from like a young age, I had a vision of who I wanted to be. And I think I fell off that path for a couple of years. But I think it would be probably a feeling of relief if me then had met me now, because it'd be like, oh, yeah, like you turned it around, you know, like it's going to be okay. And I'm not perfect and life's not perfect, but I think relief, because I think, you know, a lot of people think it's going to feel so amazing when I attain some level of success. But I think most people just end up feeling really relieved.
Yeah.
Right after, like you win the big marathon that you've been training for years, relief. You launch the book you've been writing for 2 years, relief. Yeah. You get the round of funding you've been wanting to get for relief.
I got to keep doing this and I'm not a f*** up.
Yeah. I didn't fail.
Yeah.
It's more just like, I didn't lose. I'm still in the game.
So right. It's not like your first 100,000, your first million, like life markedly changes. It's more just like just a little bit more security in the back of your head that lets you take the next risk a little bit harder.
Yeah.
If she saw you at that point and that felt that relief, do you think she would have ended up taking the same actions and choices to where you are today, or maybe even more risks or less so?
I think I just would have gone faster.
Yeah, sure.
I think in the moment, the hardest thing was like, I didn't have any friends. You know, I got rid of all of them and I feel like I got some new friends, but it was like, it was tough. It just felt very lonely. And I think I would have just taken the leap much faster, because I think there's this quote, I don't even know where I heard it, but it was like, fear is a mile wide and an inch deep. So like you think it's this big ocean of fear that you're about to step into, and you take the step and you realize it's just this puddle, and it might be like years that you've been procrastinating something. And the moment you do it, it feels so insignificant that you're like, I can't believe that that's what I was scared of. Didn't even happen. I think I just would have gone faster through the puddles.